Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. Since 1979, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence have raised more than $1 million for issues such as HIV/AIDS prevention, education, and the promotion of sexual health, advocacy for queer youth and breast cancer, housing for underserved community members, and anti-violence and anti-bullying campaigns. This Order of Queer Nuns is a charity, direct action, spiritual, and street performance organization that uses high camp to call attention to human rights and diversity issues both locally and globally. Advocating equally for joy and justice, the sisters have been called irreverent, indecent, godsends to the Bay Area community, blasphemous, and of course, fabulous. So joining me this evening in the studio are several of the order here in San Francisco. I'd like to introduce you to, first, Sister Maura Lee Declined, the nun of your business.
Hello, nice to be here tonight.
Sister Maura has been involved with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence for almost 5 years and serves as the abbess or president of the order for 2014. Then we're joined by Sister Eden Asp, the Forbidden Fruit. Originally from Dallas, Texas, Sister Eden grew up a nice Methodist boy and went off to college on a United Methodist scholarship. And in her secular life,
right.
Oops.
Good, bad, either or.
She has devoted most of her professional life to the fight against HIV/AIDS. And for over 25 years, she has worked as activist and advocate for effective HIV prevention campaigns and comprehensive services to meet the needs of those living with HIV. Sister Eden currently works as a wellness coach in the Stop AIDS Project's Positive Force program. And she's currently starting her second term on the board of directors and looks forward to helping shape the sisters' 35th anniversary event in Dolores Park this coming Easter. Welcome, Sister Eden.
Great to be here.
And finally, we are joined by Sister Roma. There's no place like Rome. For more than 25 years, Sister Roma has been widely photographed and recognized for her various roles, raising awareness and lots of money in service of the LGBTQ community and beyond. In 1987, in response to a spike in hate crimes, she founded the Stop the Violence campaign. A writer and talk show hostess, Sister Roma is known for her outspokenness, wit, and glamour. She's a much sought-after TV guest and MC for such events as the annual Hunky Jesus contest and the White Party in both Palm Springs and Miami. And in 2012, she was honored as a San Francisco Pride Grand Marshal. Welcome, Sister Roma.
Thank you. What an introduction. You make me blush. It's all true, by the way.
And we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation this evening. You can email us now at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment at kalw.org or on our Facebook page. And in just 20 minutes or so, we'll open our phone lines for you at 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. So, Sister Roma, I wanted to start with you. You've been doing this work for more than 25 years. And give us a little primer on how you came to do this work and a little bit of the sistery of the sisters.
Okay. Well, the sisters are entering our 36th year. I came to the order in 1987. I had moved to San Francisco after I graduated from college in 1985. And one of my best friends at the time, Norman, was, little beknownst to me, a member of the Sisters. And I'd never heard of the group before, mind you. And I was after work cocktails at the Midnight Sun in my power tie with my little circle of friends. And we were all sipping two-for-one cocktails and staring up at the video screens on opposite ends of the bar, if you've ever been to the Midnight Sun. And this creature just burst through the door, who looked like a drag queen, showgirl, clown, nun. And for the first time that night, everyone's attention was turned away from the screens and actually focusing on another person. And people were intrigued and involved and interested and curious. And she seemed to know everybody there. And she just had this gregarious personality and greeted everyone with a smile and a laugh and called everyone darling. And I was like, what the heck? We can't swear. Is that right?
That's right.
I'll do my best. Are we have a 3-second delay? No delay? Oh, boy. So she caught everyone's attention, caught my attention, and she approached me and called me by my name, Michael. And I said, who are you? And she said, it's me, Norman. And I was like, what are you doing? And she told me about the sisters, and I started to work with the group just as a boy to volunteer. And that's sort of what got me involved with the sisters. And then the more that I learned, the more I realized that I cared about things like human rights and people who were sick and dying. And I was impressed by the fact that just basically what were six active members at the time in the order could create such a change in the world. And it's really like a light bulb went off in my head. My mind exploded, my heart exploded, and I knew that I didn't want to live in vain and that I wanted to do something important. And I felt like the sisters were a great way to do that.
And so you mentioned that the order here in San Francisco has been around for over 30 years. Was this the founding order, so to speak?
Absolutely. It all started right here in 1979 when a group of people from Iowa got some nuns' habits that they had procured under...
Procured.
Yeah, right. Well, there's various stories about that. But anyway, they had these nuns' habits. And they put them on Easter Sunday and just went out to the Castro to just basically screw around and see what would happen. And the reaction that they got from people was so astounding that they realized they were on to something. And they sort of organized a group and came up with the name Perpetual Indulgence and organized. And the rest is herstory.
Hmm. And so how many orders are there worldwide at this point?
Wow. Help me out, girls.
There's a ton. So we've got over, and I haven't taken count lately, but I'd say we probably have over 25 orders throughout the world right now.
And can you speak to particular corners of the world that might be surprising to our listeners where there may be an order of the sisters?
Germany. We've got South America and Paraguay.
Alabama.
Alabama.
I wouldn't have imagined we'd have sisters in Alabama.
No, me either.
You know, so it's a far-reaching calling that we share.
And so tell me both, that was originally Sister Roma, now Sister Maura and Sister Eden. Tell me a little bit more about how you got involved and weave into there a little bit more of the history of this organization.
Well, I always like to say I discovered the sisters as an 11-year-old in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, in a motel room where our family was on vacation, and it was 1984, I think, the year that the Democratic National Convention was here in San Francisco. And so I had been taking a shower, and I came out, and my parents had the Democratic National Convention on, and they were interviewing people protesting at the convention, and they had a sister. And I had no idea what it was about. I was a long, long, long way from realizing I was gay, but there was something about the costume, the exaggeration, the outrageousness that I connected with then. So then you fast forward many years, 20-ish years, and I was working with the St. James Infirmary, which is a healthcare clinic for people who work in the adult industry. And for those that don't know, Roma also works in the adult industry, and we were looking for an MC to put on an event. And so I worked with Roma to put together an event for St. James. And looking back on it now, I naively thought, well, I'll pick up some event-based fundraising skills because I'd mostly done grant-based development work. I'll pick up some event-based fundraising skills and maybe I'll make a few friends. No idea, like 4 years later, how it would change my life. It being a sister is not just something you do, I feel. It's something you become. And these people aren't just my friends or people that I volunteer with. They become a family. And that's what it's been like for me.
And for you, Sister Maura?
So I grew up in the trailer parks of Wichita, Kansas, and various areas thereabouts. And I had a very, very conservative Christian upbringing. I grew up as a Jehovah's Witness. I was married for 7 years. I have a 12-year-old daughter. And it wasn't until after I got divorced, after she found my interesting little movie stash online, that I came to San Francisco as a gay man and ended up moving here. And the first time I saw one of the sisters, it was Sister Barbie Mitzvah. And she is about 6 foot 10 and a half. I don't know. She's this giant, giant Jewish woman with this big nose and skin that eats her makeup. Love you, Barbie. And I looked at it, and she's wearing feather boas, and she's wearing this little short dress. And I said, what in the H-E double hockey sticks is that? And I went up and was kind of scared to introduce myself, but I did, and met them and talked a little bit to Sister Barbie, and ended up finding out that one of my friends, again, was a sister who ended up being my sponsor in the order, Sister Constance Lee Craving. And just as I got to know more about the organization, the more I realized I wanted to use that as a tool to give back to the community, a community that I was still kind of coming into as a recently outed gay man.
So tell us a little bit about the reach of the organization. What kinds of projects are the sisters involved in currently? I know fundraising is a big aspect of it. Tell us how much you raise in an average year.
You know what? It really depends from year to year, but I would say well over $250,000 annually. We not only do large events like Pink Saturday, we participate in Folsom Street Fair, or Dory Alley, those kind of events, but we also do throughout the year individual organizations, kind of pet projects for each individual sister, organizations that they like to work with, organizations that they want to continue to help as they serve the community. And so we raise a lot of money throughout the year on big projects as well as a lot of small ones too.
Well, that's one of the great things about the sisters is that there are so many of us and there are so many causes and we all have different things that we're passionate about. So we support youth and women's issues and breast cancer and the arts and anti-violence and HIV. There's just no limit to the causes that the sisters support and believe in and fight for. And we not only have our own fundraisers, but we support other organizations in their fundraisers. You can always find a sister just about at everything that happens in the city. There's going to be one of us there volunteering in some capacity, whether we're selling a raffle ticket or just being a host or an MC or something. We're doing something. Almost every night of the week, you're going to find a sister out there. No one is safe.
And Roma goes to the opening of an envelope, so.
I do. And a car door. I love that. That's a good one.
And a bedroom door.
Right.
But, you know, I think one of the other things is that we talk that we raise money, we raise awareness, and we raise spirits. So in addition to the fundraising component, there's also a lot of kind of pastoral interactions, being somebody, a safe person in a bar. I mean, one of the benefits of having this long history is that really people know who we are. And for many people, when they see us in a bar, we can be that safe person. We're the weirdest person in the room, generally, when we walk in.
Hands down.
Right. True dat.
And that creates a little bit of a safety for people who may feel like they don't, and so many of us feel like we don't fit in for some reason. Too big, too small, too this, too that. And so we can be there for that person who I've been struck by, like how many people just want to know that they're okay how they are. And sometimes a blessing from a sister is just like something that they will ask for to feel okay in that space. And the fact that we can do that, I think, is one of the things I love most about being a sister, to help other people feel okay about themselves.
Absolutely. Well, the thing that struck me in the earlier years, you know, when I joined in 87, when HIV was still ravaging the community and people had a lot of stigma and questions about it, people were scared, frightened, and people were visibly strict with the disease. There was Kaposi's, and people would go blind and lose weight. I mean, you know, it was such a different disease. It was awful. And people were shunned, and no one would talk to them. No one would go near them. No one would hold them. And the sisters always did. And the sisters taught me, when I joined the order, not to be afraid of those people and not to be afraid of the disease. The sisters were the first group ever to produce a safer sex pamphlet, to hold a fundraiser to help people who were sick with HIV before it was even called AIDS. The sisters just had a grip on it and knew that it was a virus and a disease and that it wasn't a judgment from God and it wasn't something that was to be feared. It was something to be faced head on and fought with education and compassion. And the sisters just taught me that from the beginning. And we would go hug people that other people wouldn't even look at. And that was one of the things that really, really just grounded me and made me realize how much I love the sisters and love our work and realize that I could never not do it.
So why nuns?
You know, there's a powerful, powerful imagery, whether you're Catholic or not, whether you're Protestant, that is associated with the nuns. It's a trusted figurehead. It is, there's a lot of comfort and safety and sometimes a little fear, which is always good to instill in people at times. So the image of the nun is something that we utilize as a tool, and our calling as sisters is very much along the lines of that of a traditional nun. It's service to a community in aspects that other people traditionally do not want to participate in. You know, I don't see a whole lot of people lining up to be Mother Teresa and go and help the poor. And she is arguably one of the most recognizable nun names. And so when we go out as nuns, as sisters, there's that connection in people's heads that allow them to... Yeah, we're in drag, we're 6 foot tall, we may have 4-inch pumps on, and we've got crazy makeup on, but there's that connection that goes, oh, this is a safe spot. This is somebody that I can come and reflect with.
And I think, too, that there's an inherent silliness to being dressed up like a nun, but having dark facial hair and a big beard and all of this, that contradiction. There's always been an element, I think, of gender ambiguity and really playing with people's notions of gender. And I've heard some sisters say, we're like the rodeo clown of the gay community, to be that lightning rod. So if you have a problem with gender ambiguous people, you can start that conversation with me, you know. So, and I've kind of admired that aspect of the work as well.
Well, let's face it, nuns are just funny. And hairy, bearded nuns are hilarious. And pregnant nuns are a riot. I mean, they're just, nuns are kooky.
And a good portion of our members look like they're hairy, pregnant nuns. So it works.
There you go.
But I do want to add one thing, because many people have the misconception that we're making fun of nuns. And I think most of us have a huge respect for women in ministry. And it is not about making fun of them. What I think the sisters do is poke at the hypocrisy of the institution of the church at times, but we're definitely not making fun of Roman Catholic nuns.
Oh, absolutely not. Utmost respect for nuns, for women in general. I think most of the sisters, I know most of the sisters have the utmost respect for women. We would never make fun of women. It's more of a homage than anything else.
So, you know, nuns are shrouded in a lot of mystery. Tell us a little bit more about who can become a sister, and what the process is.
Oh my. So anybody can really become a sister. But there is a lot of learning that goes along with, you know, taking that step. Just like with the traditional process of traditional nuns, there's a growth period, a learning period. You have to understand how to interact with the community. As a sister, you have to understand the challenges that our community faces, as well as the challenges that you are going to face as a queer drag nun. And so the process at a minimum takes 12 months. But the process is the process and kind of unique for each individual. And like we've mentioned before, you get to decide how your process folds out. You get to decide what passions you want to concentrate on within your community. So it's really a customized program for each individual person that approaches the sisters.
Hmm. Yeah, we couldn't have more individuals, more exciting, interesting, eclectic individuals in the group. We have men, women, transgender, every race is welcome. My sisters are born. I have to say that I believe that a nun, a sister perpetual indulgence is born. And you know when you feel that calling that it's you, and you know that this is your life's work, and then you approach a sister. And you can go to our website for more information, and you can come to one of our meetings and then find a sponsor sister and begin the process that Morley was talking about.
Yeah, I would say like the one kind of context or situation where it doesn't work out or it doesn't connect is sometimes people's motivation is not around service or ministry, but they just want to be Roma.
Yeah,
they
does.
Free cocktails and look fabulous. And that's sometimes that's what people see, and they don't understand that there's a lot of there's meaning behind what we're doing, and it's not all free cocktails and feathers and glitter.
Just like always, there's a lot of work and safety pin and spackle underneath that beauty.
It's very
right.
True.
Do you have to take vows?
We do.
Absolutely.
And what would those be?
They are really, really long, and I don't have them committed to memory, but a good portion of those vows involve our commitment and our service to the community. One of the biggest aspects, and one of my very favorite part of the vows, is that I vow never to take myself so seriously that I forget to have fun. Because even though this is a lot of work and there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that the public may not see, and drama and work and exhaustive effort, we have such a blast doing what we do. We are the biggest fraternal sorority that I have ever seen, and we are sisters, and we have so much fun with each other.
We vow also to expiate stigmatic guilt and promulgate universal joy.
What was that first one?
I have no idea what it means. Now, expiate stigmatic guilt, which is the guilt that the Christians, Catholics believe we're all born with, and to promulgate universal joy is something that we do with regularity.
Well, and that expiation, I mean, really, when I think of the guilt that we try to get rid of, it's that guilt that other people have instilled in us that we're not good enough because we're gay, because we don't look like an Abercrombie and Fitch model, because we're short, our hair's thinning, we have wrinkles, we're getting old, etc. I mean, all of those things that other people's judgments place upon it, that guilt that we all have to deal with on a daily basis when we look in the mirror sometimes from behind. Go ahead, Eden.
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting is like how the perception of the sisters has changed since the early days. One of the slogans that we like to invoke is ruining it for everyone since 1979. But we go into a bar now and people are like, oh, the sisters are here. Oh, my God, this is so great. But I've heard stories from sisters who have been around far longer than I that in the early days you would walk in and there were a lot of gays who thought that, you know, we were the poster child of everything that they hated, like, you know, being flamboyant. I mean, there was a real movement toward assimilation, and we were really a challenge to those who thought gays should try to assimilate and fit in. And we were like, don't fit in, be your fabulous self.
So exactly.
You can probably speak to that. You may have been involved when there was still more of that.
Well, yes, but everyone always loved me.
Sometimes twice a night.
Hopefully.
If they threw a drink in your face, you just like kind of aimed to grab it, right? Like,
no, but you know, we had a long road ahead of us. I mean, because we were groundbreaking. No one in the world had ever seen the sisters until we manifested here in San Francisco. And there was a lot of prejudice and a lot of anger towards the group because it took a long time for us to establish ourselves so people realize that we are legitimate. We're a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we're reliable, and we are trustworthy and serious about what we do.
If you're just joining us, this is City Visions on 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're speaking with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Excuse me, I'm getting verklempt here. We have Sister Maura and Sister Roma and Sister Eden. And we open the phone lines now for you to join our conversation, 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can also email us at, excuse me.
We have to perform a blessing, sister.
I think so. I haven't had my throat blessed in a long time.
Really? I'm sorry to hear that.
I grew up Catholic, and it's one of the rituals.
That's not what I specialize
most.
In, though.
We can expiate that guilt for you, dear.
Thank you. Also, you can email us at cityvisions@klw.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. So let's go to our first caller, and that's Sister Coy Aguilar. Welcome to the program.
Sisters, it's Sister Coy, the abbess of Palm Springs. How are you all this evening?
Oh, well, hello, darling. We're wonderful. How are you?
Hello, darling. Our house is doing wonderful, and I'm doing wonderful. You know, our past abbess is now a nun from above from last Wednesday, so we're gathering ourselves.
That's what we saw. It was very
but
sad.
I just wanted to, other than that, we're doing well. And I just wanted to let folks know that we are all over. We are a small house here in Palm Springs. We have 17 members. This is our seventh year. We have donated back to the community $75,360.
That's a lot of money to drag out of that little Palm Springs
that's
community.
A lot of tickets, honey. That's a lot of. Oh, we're not supposed to say bad things. Is that correct?
That's a lot correct. Of work, sister.
That's a lot of belt to the floor tickets. Let me tell you. We have monthly bingos that are very successful. We're very well accepted here in the desert, and we are blessed that many former San Franciscoites now live here, so they knew who the sisters were. So we had an edge up here in the desert.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So we are doing quite well. We have guards in our house, which I didn't hear you all talk about. They are either male or females who choose a different path, much like the sisters. And they're really not DQAs, drag queen assistants. They are full members in our house with full voting rights. And we have 1, 2, 3, 4 of those currently.
Fabulous.
So we have transgenders, we have natural born women, we have boys, we have girls, we have whoever wants to come help sell a dollar or take a dollar or just give somebody a hug. We are so open to that. We have a very diverse house here in the desert.
That is what we do, sister. And I'm looking forward to seeing you for the white party in
April. Absolutely come down, because Jeffrey's going to let us in and we're going to be all pretty and white.
Honey, it's 25-year anniversary this year. I'll be there.
Yes, it is.
Well, if there's any group of sisters that should not be wearing white, it's Palm Springs Sisters.
Yes. Well, Jeffrey Sanker, the producer of that, contacted us 7 years ago, and we do safe sex kits at the white party every year.
Very good. Well, I'm going to have to leave it there for you, but thank you so much for joining us, because we have a couple of other callers we want to get to. So I think we're going to go to Sister Baba next. Welcome to the program.
Hey, hello? Sister Baba.
Sister Baba? Who's that?
Can y'all hear me?
Grr. Put your phone up to the ear.
Aloha.
Aloha. How was your Hawaiian trip, darling?
It was wonderful. I missed your faces. You all look wonderful tonight.
We all have faces for radio.
Well, I'm just so excited to hear y'all sound so wonderful, and I'm so excited that it's our 35th anniversary. And, you know, among the things that I think that's in discussion in the house is the whole issue of gentrification and eviction and the concern about who's coming in and who's being booted out. And I'm really excited to be part of that in the coming years. And are any of you part of that discussion?
Well, I have not done a great deal. I did, there was the Our Mission No Evictions March that I did do as a fully professed sister, and it was an official Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence event. And it was voted unanimously to make that anti-eviction march a sister event. And since I live in the mission, and that is in a lot of ways ground zero for a lot of these evictions, personally, me as a sister, I really care about that issue a great deal.
Yeah, it's intense in terms of what it's doing and how it's shaping our city, especially with changing demographics. But yeah, I often think about in our 35th, like, what is the work ahead and what's needed. So yeah, I totally look forward to spending this amazing anniversary year with y'all. And y'all look great, and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow night.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow night, darling.
Okay, she was high.
Thanks so much for your call. Sister Baba raises an interesting question, which is, what is the arc of the organization? I mean, HIV/AIDS came after the initiation of the organization. But it was pretty much an issue that could not be ignored. How is the scope changing, and what does the organization as a whole see itself? What direction does it see itself going in?
Well, and this is kind of a fun issue or a fun question there, because with every new member that we have added, the organization changes ever so slightly, and the needs of our community, more and more of the needs of our community are brought to light. So, for instance, you know, each sister takes on their own kind of personal passions and projects. You know, of course, HIV and AIDS awareness is still a huge issue, as is, you know, the gentrification of San Francisco and those who are being underserved in San Francisco with regards to health and medical and welfare. You know, homelessness is such a huge issue. So we have several sisters that do that as well. And I think the short answer to that is that our mission, our arc, really changes as more and more needs of our community come up, both locally and globally. So it's an ever-evolving moving target.
You know, and I think, too, we have a history of being on the vanguard of issues affecting the LGBT community. I've been told one of the first events that the sisters did was a benefit for refugees from the Muriel boat lift, which was a controversial thing at its time. A lot of people didn't think those refugees should be here. And so the sisters step up to that. And, you know, as our order has brought in more trans folks, I think that we have started doing more around trans issues. And now we see this, as Baba brought up, the eviction issue is really coming to the fore, not just for queer people, but for all, you know, those of us who've lived in San Francisco for a long time, and particularly activists, artists,
you know, usually not the most well-compensated folks holding on to by our fingertips to our rent-controlled apartments here in the city. So I think it's...
The people who make San Francisco the city that we all know and love, the city that we all flock to because of our differences and our creativity, those people are the ones being the most strongly affected, and that's one of the reasons that the sisters are so passionate about trying to stop these evictions, to see a change in the Ellis Act laws, mm-hmm. to help people... keep their apartments and keep San Francisco, you know, the San Francisco that we love. We don't want to see it change too dramatically.
And even in issues that we've been working on throughout our history, like HIV, you know, you see that these issues are evolving. And so now we see, like, last year at Faytopia, I did a talk on Truvada and the brave new world of safer sex and how you see people doing things like PrEP and having discussions around what undetectable viral load means. And so we continue and we update Playfair. We did a 30th anniversary edition of Playfair where we go through the whole thing in detail and see what needs to be updated. How has information about HIV changed, you know, since we last did an update? So there's always kind of a continual process of staying on these issues that haven't really gone away, then they still need our attention.
Well, in the 90s, you know, the sisters had a very global look, and Sister Vicious and Sister X went to Europe. And that started the whole explosion of orders of sisters in Europe. And one of the things that we have coming up this year is a trip to Shanghai to be part of their 6th annual Pride celebration, which is groundbreaking and huge. So they've invited a few sisters from San Francisco, Paris, and Berlin to attend that event. It's a week-long celebration. They don't have a parade because it's China, and you know they don't allow parades, but they do have forums and parties, and we're going to be speaking to different groups of people. They expect to have about 3,000 celebrants this year, and it's something that's so exciting because it's a communist country, and China's approach to the LGBT community is very encouraging, especially when you relate it to like what's going on in Russia.
Mm. I did want to stay with that for a moment. Thinking about recent rulings or events in India, Russia, Uganda, elsewhere in the world, how do you see, as things are changing dramatically in a positive direction for LGBT rights around the world, that there are some places where things are getting much more draconian, or there's a revisiting of that. How do you see this, and how do you see the sisters kind of, as they expand into other parts of the world, making sense of that and finding their purpose there?
Well, I went to the Russian consulate here for a demonstration. I know that we will organize and stand up and fight and speak at every chance that we get. You know, I would love to go to the games. Mm-hmm. Boy, I would love to go to those games and let them have the full Roma treatment. I would love to do that, but
you and Billie Jean King would take care of them.
Yeah, I get so incensed by that sort of thing that it drives me crazy, and I worry about the LGBT people in Russia and Uganda. I mean, I really seriously fear for those people, and something major has got to be done, and we will do whatever we can.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long, long road.
You know, and one of the interesting pieces, of course, here in the magical bubble of San Francisco, I can walk in face, in heels, in drag, in any neighborhood, and will more often than not get a respectful nod and a hello, sister. For our South American house, for instance, it is illegal for them to dress in drag and go out in public and do that, and they run the very real risk of being arrested, being imprisoned, etc. So they have to do more guerrilla style. So they can't put on the makeup like we do. They have to go somewhere, throw on their habit very quickly, do a quick 15-20 minutes of ministry and move on. So it's the bravery of sisters and of our organization and our members in those countries that continue to push forward and represent their community and be that lightning rod, even if it is not the same way that we can do it here. That is really the inspiring aspect.
In case you're just joining us, this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're speaking with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, Sister Morally Declined, the None of Your Business, Sister Eden Asp, the Forbidden Fruit, and Sister Roma, There's No Place Like Rome. Do you have a sister story or encounter that you want to share? The number to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment at our homepage there or on our Facebook page. So let's go next to Shante. Shante, welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Do you have a question or comment for our guests?
Yeah, okay, so you talked about wanting being in a bubble in San Francisco. How come the sisters don't have their own reality show yet? I mean, don't you think that somebody like HBO's looking would want to include you in some future episodes? Or I mean, it would be nice to have more exposure, to bring more people to your, you know, your being, you know? What do you, I mean, thoughts?
Go ahead, Eden.
Well, I was going to say, I believe this is an idea that has crossed the mind, particularly of some of our L.A. sisters, a time or two. One thing to bear in mind, though, you know, is that an important thing to us in this work is that we don't do it to make money. And so, you know, if there was, you know, interest in doing it and the money might would go to a charity, that would be one thing. But that's one thing that we'd run up against, that we don't do this to make money or profit from it personally.
I think it should be called The Real Drag Nuts of San Francisco. And I am ready to take all of you girls down.
Yes, yes. No, you know, and that's a fun question. And, you know, really, we're a 501c3. We're an incorporated entity. And, you know, as the president of the order this year, one of the things that you have to make sure of is that our incorporated brand maintains its integrity. And if you have ever watched any of those horrid, insipid, addicting reality shows, then you know that they do camera pans and they would get my angles wrong and make my butt look big. It would just be terrible. It'd be terrible.
Just to bring it back for a moment to the scope of the mission around HIV/AIDS, I have an email here from Keiko in Berkeley. The question is, how has AIDS or safer sex education changed as more treatments have become available and younger queers don't remember the worst of the plague years?
You know, working with Positive Force, that's my day job. I work with a lot of recently diagnosed guys, and you know, for one thing, it's, even though treatments have advanced, and thank God, you know, we're in a far different place than we were, you know, 15, 20 years ago, but it's still tough news to take in, to wrap your head around, and so people still need support. I think one of the challenging things of doing HIV work right now is recognizing that it is not the same, you're going to get this and then die kind of scenario, so that people don't have, they're more willing to take risks. And we have more options now, like pre-exposure prophylaxis, PrEP, and people are using things like serosorting, seropositioning, where you kind of decide whether you're going to have sex with someone based on a discussion of serostatus or what role you're going to play. So we have a lot more tools now, and that we have to have a more nuanced approach, because we don't want to, like, bang people over the head with fear again. I mean, that's, I think, been an unfortunate thing, that the HIV epidemic has, you know, been fought with fear. You've got to be afraid of HIV, which just unfortunately happens to be in a lot of our brothers. So I'm glad that there's less fear, but it makes the education that we do, it has to be more nuanced.
So staying for a moment, you do HIV work in your day job, so to speak, and with the sisters. Tell us what's different about what you do, how you do it, and the scope of what you do when you're in face, as you would say, or not.
Well, there are certainly some things that I do in my work. I'll go out as a sister, because one thing Positive Force does is we organize social events for the POS community. So we went to sing along Sound of Music. So it's always easier to spot the drag nun in the crowd. So, you know, I'm easy to find. And so in social things, or when we have a holiday party, it's very festive. However, when we're doing, like, on February 1st and 2nd, we're going to be doing one of our PLUS seminars, which is like a two-day intensive retreat type experience. And so for things like that, or the one-on-one counseling that I do with folks who are recently diagnosed, in that context, people don't want to see the feathers and sequins. They, you know, because they're really looking for, you know, really practical support. And in that regard, I think they'd rather deal with Brad than Sister Eden. So, but it is interesting that, you know, there's this core of being a compassionate person, of being able to listen to people, and that it's a real transferable skill. And I think being a sister has deepened that in me and enhanced those skills.
More aroma, did you want to add to that?
Ditto.
No, I think it's beautiful. And I have to say that after 26 years of being Sister Roma, it's really hard to tell the difference between Michael and Roma, not just for me, but for other people. I mean, everyone calls me Roma. It's just who I am. When I'm dressed, I don't feel that much different. It's just an expression of who I really am. So everything that I do is interchangeable, and it's always me, and it's always real. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're going to get.
Yeah, and for my day job, you know, I work in the insurance industry, health benefits, thanks Obama for Obamacare. And, you know, big old white-laced suit and tie corporate whore kind of guy during the day. And so the sisterhood really allows me to take my focus away from the spreadsheets and the financial numbers, et cetera, and really focus back on the community. Hmm.
So let's talk a little bit more about each of your individual projects in turn. So Sister Roma, you started the Stop the Violence campaign.
Yes.
Is that campaign still going? And tell us about it.
Well, it was our 10th anniversary, and there was a huge spike in hate crimes. People were being attacked all around the Castro and the Mission, and the sisters were outraged. I was particularly upset, and I was reminded of a program that we had when I was in elementary school called the Black Mother Program, where certain mothers would volunteer to be a safe house for people who were being bullied or beat up or there was a problem. So they would make a placard with a hand on it that said Black Mother, and you'd put it in your front window, and then kids would know that that was a place that they could go to for safety or to get help. So I designed a window placard with a pink triangle that says Stop the Violence to use that as our symbol of a safe place. And the idea was that we'd get it to people to put in their windows and storefronts. And we started to distribute that around the Castro and the Mission. And then we later added whistles, which are very effective to help when you're being attacked. If you pull your whistle out and blow, you attract attention. You might scare away your attacker. They're invaluable. And then we added safe sex information to it. So it became a whole packet that we would hand out. And then we did that on college campuses around the Mission and the Castro. And then eventually we lost steam with it and sort of put it to bed. And then at Pink Saturday, we had a shooting and someone was killed, and it resurrected our anger and our passion and our concern. So we started the Stop the Violence campaign again, and it's going on today. And it's in conjunction with the San Francisco Police Department and the Castro Community on Patrol. So it's turned into quite a major effort to help stop the violence. It's raising awareness to hate crimes and helping people. We also remind people about safer decisions, you know, when you're about alcohol and drugs and partying and not to travel alone. There's just all kinds of information that we hand out that we care about. So that was one of my projects. I'm also very involved with the youth. I'm on the board of directors. I'm the board of advisors for Bay Area Youth Summit, which is a really great organization, and we're having a fundraiser on February 2nd at the Edge for that group.
Hmm. And then how about work that you all have done around bullying? Tell us more about that.
Oh my God, one of my very favorite things that our order did, of course, was the Dan Savage Project, It Gets Better. And a fabulous, you know, of course everybody was putting out videos, but to click on the video, and It Gets Better video, and see a row of sisters talking about how it gets better and being all made up, and Sister Roma saying that, you know, everybody, our clothes are better anyway. It's okay to be gay. Don't let people bully you. Be proud of yourself. Come talk to me. I'll hang out with you. You know, and that's really, that to me spoke to our work as a sister.
So it sounds like the messages that are being spread and the ones you want to get out there are maybe not that different from the messages that engaged some of you here around this table tonight, some 20 odd years later, maybe more. I'm being generous.
Rude.
Say more about that. What does it feel like to you now, remembering back to where you were in the past as a queer youth. What is it like for you now to see that as much as things have changed, in many ways, the fundamental messages are the same and the need for them is the same?
Well, you know, in my little intro piece that I did, I talked about being a good little Methodist boy who went off to school on a Methodist scholarship. And so for me, part of the work that I still do is a lot of kind of ecumenical organizing around spiritual outreach to the LGBT community. We as sisters, you know, there are sisters of all different kinds of faiths and sisters who are atheists. So, but I think that the idea of, you know, so many queer people do feel exiles from their faith tradition. And to support, like, one of the groups that I'm really excited about for the year ahead is a group called Sacred Space. People may be familiar with Night Ministry. And so this is an outgrowth of Night Ministry. And
say a little bit more about Night Ministry, say, for the context purpose.
Sure. Night Ministry, I believe Night Ministry is close to, like, its 50th anniversary. And it's not just an LGBT outreach. It's for anyone who's out on the street at night. And so they would provide funding for ministers. I think the person most associated with it is Reverend Diana Wheeler, who's an Episcopal deacon, and she's still involved with it to this day. And in some ways, she does a lot of the stuff that we sisters do, which is being a non-judgmental person that people can talk to. And for people who feel excluded for a variety of reasons, to have a safe person to talk to in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. And then she also organizes. I've been a part of her Palm Sunday procession. One of the things that always strikes me about that is, and the sisters are in some ways like their bodyguards, or we make it okay for them, because it is surprising how much anger that people walking through the Castro in a collar can get projected at them, because people experienced hurt from the church. And even though I know Diana's a lovely person, having this troop of crazy looking drag nuns helps signal to people that these people are okay, they like us, you can approach us. So I hope we'll continue to do some of these kind of public open mass or darshan, where we walk through the community, because a lot of people, for all the people who may, like, have a hostile reaction, there are also so many people who come up who say, you know, I've always wanted to be involved and feel like I could go to a church. Is there a place where I could go for services and be accepted? So, you know, you get that reaction a lot as well.
415-841-4134 is the number to dial to join our conversation here on City Visions at 91.7 KLW San Francisco. And we're joined tonight by Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, Sister Maura, Sister Roma, and Sister Eden Asp. 415-841-4134. You can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org. So, speaking of ceremony, let's turn our attention to the Hunky Jesus contest.
Oh, my favorite.
Yay.
So tell us the story of how that got started and what its purpose was and what it's become.
Well, Easter is our anniversary. As I mentioned earlier, the sisters were founded on Easter Sunday, so we have a huge anniversary party. And it's not a fundraiser. We don't ask for money from the community. We want to actually throw a party for the community. And over the years, it has grown into a major event. It takes place in Dolores Park. We have upwards of 5,000 people in the park that day who show up for a great stage show, local entertainers, performers, drag queens, bands, rock and roll, children, Easter egg hunts. It is the epitome of a beautiful San Francisco Easter. And then, later in the afternoon, adults only are invited to join us for the Hunky Jesus contest, where we have contestants come up. And I've emceed this event for...
Ever,
I think. Yeah, since it started.
Yep.
And it is one of the most talked about and adored events in San Francisco, because it's so iconic and it raises a lot of eyebrows and really makes a lot of Christians super pissed off. And that's kind of a plus for us. So we have this great contest, and we've had Chunky Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Funky Jesus. Played a guitar. Junkie Jesus, who was stuck full of needles.
Oh, yes.
Yes, and we have had
Jesus Blanking Christ.
Yeah, that was a good one. He had a little puppet in front of him. You can picture.
Yeah.
We also have Marys come on stage and popes and just about everybody, you know, who's drunk enough to come. No, really, I'm always surprised by the creativity of the people. People get into it, and it's a really fun event.
There was the grilled Jesus.
Grilled Jesus, that's a good one. Yes, yeah. Very good.
We had one Jesus, 2 years ago or last year, who made a bass guitar out of a cross.
And played it.
And it was an electric bass guitar. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So we've touched upon the spiritual aspect. You've talked about ministry, and you've used those terms. So tell me a little bit more about the relationship to spirituality in this group, given that it sort of sits within certain ways of iconic images of spiritual tradition, and yet it's sort of juxtaposed against it. But then you talk about times when there's ways that you bridge that divide. Tell us about the spiritual aspect of this work, because it sounds like there's something more there than a group of concerned folks who are getting together and dressing up like nuns to raise some money and some awareness.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that for a lot of sisters, and again, just to reiterate, we're not a religious organization by any stretch of the imagination. We have, you know, Christians, we have Jews as members. We have, you know, me, a former Jehovah's Witness. We have pagans, we have witches, we have priestesses. It's very much an eclectic mix, which I think really resonates within our community, because there's a lot of different faiths within the LGBTQ community. And what we really strive to fight against is not necessarily the spirituality that's involved with most major organized religions. The spirituality is really the part that touches most of us when we talk about organized religion. It's the fundamental organization of organized religion, kind of that dogma and the process and procedure that we are all kind of subjected to, that we really fight against. And because we have had that taken away from us because we are gay or transgender or bisexual or what have you, we've been told we're not good enough. We seek other ways to fulfill that spirituality. And for many sisters, this is an aspect of their spiritual life.
Well, you know, I was raised Catholic, and I was educated at Aquinas College in Grand Rapids, Michigan, taught by Jesuit priests and nuns. So, and I'm, you know, very familiar with the whole stand up, sit down, fight process of religion. And I appreciate the tenets of religion, and I think that the Bible is full of some great stories and some great morals. But the real crux of the work that I do is my deep love and commitment to my community and to the underserved members of our community that we work with on a regular basis. One of my favorite events is Tenderloin Tessie's, where we serve over 1,000 meals to homeless people on Easter, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. And to me, volunteering on those holidays is what those holidays are supposed to be all about. I live to relate to those people and share stories and joy and look forward to seeing them every year.
She's getting verklempt.
Yes. That is what the spirituality part of it is to me. It is the interaction and the love for the community and the people who need it and who recognize us and know that they can count on us for that. And I love that.
Yeah, if she hadn't had her tear ducts removed to look thinner, she'd be crying right now.
Sorry.
Another piece of where spirituality often comes into play, you know, an aspect of sister work that some embrace is working in hospice settings. And so that it is hard to get more profound than that, than sitting with someone in the process of dying. And there's, in some ways, there's really nothing to do except be there, hold the hand. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to do anything. It's just being present and being a loving presence. And it's not, it's very related to that bar situation where that lonely person in the bar, back dark corner of the bar who just needs someone to be with them, somebody to listen to them and to help them feel like they're okay just as they are.
And in this time where we talk a lot about disconnection and alienation due to social media and other ways that are supposed to facilitate connection and yet sort of keep us at arm's length. How do you see the work that you do and the work of others helping to kind of bridge that gap for people who might feel disconnected or alienated?
You know, I really think that is where the sisters use the social media to great effect. You know, everybody, all of us have Facebook accounts, Twitter accounts. We have followers. We have a very wide audience that we can reach. And the message that we bring is, okay, get off of here and come join us. Get over here to this event. Come and work with your community. One of the organizations that we work with, and you may see the advertisements for them on the Muni stops, is the Bridgemen. And they have these fabulous posters about Mr. Manor says, and it's, you know, get off your phone. You know, put your phone away. Mr. Manor says it's ever so lovely to put your phone away when you're around everybody else. Because there's nothing worse than walking into a bar with really, really hot gay men and everybody staring at their phone on Grindr. It's just terrible.
It's true. It's bad. It's bad. It's bad. It happens. But I believe that the social networking that we do is very important, and it reaches so many people. And there are people who can't, who are basically shut-ins that reach out. You know, I have a talk show. I work in the adult industry, and I have a talk show we've been doing for 5 years called The Tim and Roma Show, and it's an adult-themed live format. And we go to different events and stuff, and I get a lot of email from people who are shut-ins who just enjoy watching it, you know, from home when they can't go out. And the impact of our social media is not to be underestimated.
Absolutely.
So is there anyone out there in San Francisco, at least, that doesn't love the sisters?
Oh, of course.
There's a guy who stalks us. He's with some, like, Catholic reporter thing, and he's always at Hunky Jesus. You know? So for some people, those images are things that really push their donor base. And so they will use that to, you know, drum up donations. And, you know, I mean, I feel, though, on balance, though, we do more good being out there. Because for every person who sends in a check because they think we're horrible, there's some kid who, like I was in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, who sees some glimmer of fabulousness that he feels inside, and it may be 20 years or more before that kid grows up and comes to San Francisco or LA or Alabama, since we have a house there, and makes a connection. And but we give that hope, like Harvey Milk is saying, you got to give them hope. And I think that we do that in our own weird, fabulous way.
Any closing thoughts from you, Sister Mora or Roma, as we bring this conversation to a close?
Was that an hour already?
It has been.
Oh my
really.
Gosh, it has been. Oh, we only have a few minutes left. Oh my God. Who should
actually,
we talk about
actually
now?
Actually, 30 seconds.
Oh, 30 seconds. Oh. We love everybody in our community. Keep supporting us.
Yes.
And come to Easter in the Park. It will be 4/20, April 20th. Dolores Park. See you there.
Emerald Anniversary.
And what's your website?
Thesisters.org.
Very well. Well, that's City Visions for this evening. I want to thank our guests, Sister Mora Lee Declined, the None of Your Business, Sister Eden Asp, the Forbidden Fruit, and Sister Roma, There's No Place Like Rome. Thanks for joining me this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For a link to this and other City Visions shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts, download podcasts, and to learn more about the City Visions team, which is featured in this quarter's listener's guide from KLW, go to our page at KALW.org. Our engineer this evening was Bob Summer. Tonight's show was produced by Lisa Denenmark. Tonight, also known as Sister Duncan My Biscotti, we'll be off next Monday for the MLK holiday. Join my co-host on live again on Monday, January 27th. That's my co-host, David Onick. This is Sister Iona Mercedes, also known as Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night. Have a great week.